I'm just going to chat for about 20 minutes or so, and then there'll be time for some questions, rotten tomatoes, whatever you've got. Doesn't bother me at all. I never get through anything without my students interrupting me, so if you want to interrupt, that's fine by me. Or you ask a question in the middle of what I'm saying. You won't get an answer, but you can ask the question. Okay, so I'm talking about the Christian intellectual in the world. Maybe a bit about me. As I've said before, I did economics at what is now called Queen Mary University, and then the LSE. I arrived at what was then called Queen Mary College, which is on the Mile End Road in the East End of London. Having gone to an interview at a Cambridge college and not got in, and having just seen a glimpse of the beauty of this Cambridge college, to find that the Department of Economics at Queen Mary College was housed in what was before Spratt's Dog Biscuit Factory. And so it was a movement from the sublime to the ridiculous, and as you moved in, you could still smell the dog biscuits. So I had 3 years of economics, came out with a 2-1 in economics and smelling of dog biscuits. Really should have stopped then. I should have known and should have had friends that were truthful enough that said, that's it, McCluffery, you've done a bachelor's, you've done a master's, you're not really any more interested in economics than that. And I went off to work with John Stott as his assistant and really found that incredibly energising. And then went back to the LSE to do a PhD in economics, which was one of the biggest mistakes of my life, I think. Worked there and enjoyed the LSE, although it was a slightly sterile place, I think. And ended up with publishing the book, but not going for the viva. That's the opposite, I think, to a lot of people. In that I was working on Hayek, the economist and philosopher, one of the things I did was I got a prize to translate some of his early German work into English, and that became volume one of his collected works, and I wrote the introduction to it. But because I needed money, I went to get a job, because we were just married and we had no money, and went to get the job and got it, and then found that the organisation I was then director of was bankrupt and had to set about working to try and get some money into organisation, and things just drifted, and everybody who has not got their PhD knows how they can drift. So I am a salutary tale about how things can go wrong, but there is redemption in these things. And there have been times in my life when I've been very grateful that I did not go into classic economic work. My work actually ended up being in the role of interpreter, that I would read work which was written by academics, whether ethicists or theologians or economists, what have you, but that my heart was always for the person in the street. There was in me this sense of mission, a passion for mission, very broadly interpreted in the way that I was talking about this morning, that God wants to reach us on all levels, on all frontiers, and what we must do is equip one another to be effective in the world in which God has placed us. And I was just so aware that the work that many academics was doing, and we've heard very eloquently, I think, of the importance of that work, was not understood by the majority of the people, even though there were things in that work which were fundamental for us as a society to understand. And one of the reasons that some of us were involved in Third Way magazine right at the beginning, although I wasn't involved in the first year or so, was to do that, to actually try and develop a Christian mind. This was a phrase that had come from a guy called Harry Blamires in the 50s, and John Stott had taken it up. The idea of thinking Christianly about the world. having a Christian perspective. And that was really what I was talking about a bit this morning. There was a legitimate calling to take what people were writing about, whether it was in engineering or philosophy or in other areas, and to interpret it and to pass it on. And that may be where some of you end up, that you don't find that passion for academic life that gets you out of the bed in the morning, even though you're working on PhD in the room next door or on the kitchen table. And people who've got that passion for academia can do that, a focus on something. And maybe what will happen is you have a passion to interpret, to be someone who interprets for the world outside. As they say, well, what am I meant to be thinking about Richard Dawkins? What am I meant to be thinking about sexual ethics? What am I meant to be thinking about terrorism and war? And you're somebody who actually can think clearly. And one of the issues that we have in the church today and in society is a lack of clarity in thought. And as I said, it's actually linked to wisdom, a need for wisdom in society. And you actually will be looked to as a Christian intellectual, as somebody who is so necessary, like a glass of cold water, because you can move the complex to the clear. You can serve people by bringing clarity into their lives. And if you can bring clarity into people's lives and clear the confusion that they feel, they can make good decisions. You're enabling them to make good decisions. And that is really about Christian service. It's a wonderful calling to have that intellectual clarity that goes in, brings the confusion, separates out things that are important from unimportant things, and then says, look, these are the real issues. And you'll find Christian leaders, you'll find all kinds of people in the church, and you'll find people out there in what we call secular society, just using that dualism for a moment, who lead that kind of thinking. But there is a cost to it, because you will find yourself out there being the person who asks the awkward question, because you aren't satisfied with the things that you're being told. Now, whether this is in your employment, or whether it's in your church, or whether it's in the areas of citizenship in which you become involved, if you are someone who is an intellectual, you will always have that discipline of asking questions. And when other people are willing to say, well, I'm satisfied with what I've been told, and are complicit in what has been said, you are the grit in the oyster that brings about the pearl, but people might not like you for it. And actually persisting because you're committed to truth, and you persist because you want to get to the bottom of something, is essential for communities to actually to hear somebody doing that. To actually realise that what people are being palmed off with is not the best, and for you to work at something until you get to what the best is. The other thing I want to say is that God uses the whole of your life and not just ideas. And we've heard how ideas are part of what we're called to, but there is so much more to our calling. Just an illustration from my family life, because we're just looking at my family. I mean, I know even our name is difficult to spell, but none of us have gone in one straight direction. So, looking at my three daughters, my eldest daughter is brilliant academically. She got first in English, she got distinction in her master's, and she's working with traumatised teenagers in London. Before that, she was working in the YMCA, again, for very traumatised teenagers in a sink estate. Now, she could be in academic life, But what she has got is a passion for people who are impoverished and who are poor. Maybe she'll go back into academic life at some point. But people look at her and say, well, what are you doing? Well, you know, you're paid extraordinarily badly, or she has been up to now, and now she's actually paid more than me, but anyway, that's another issue. But you know, what are you doing? And the issue is that God's calling on her life has taken in a different direction. My youngest daughter, again, very brilliant academically, worked with people with learning disabilities, and now it's working as maternity support worker in the community. Got a first in philosophy. Why are you doing that? Well, actually, there's more to her life and her background that God is using. My middle daughter, Lizzie, had brain damage and uncontrolled epilepsy, and through brain surgery, that stopped, and is now working with kids. And there are lots of people who said, you shouldn't work with kids, you might drop one, and wanted her to sit in a chair for the rest of her life and do nothing. But God's calling on her life was to work with children. And the whole family has been affected by living with risk, with tragedy and with disability. And those things are part of my calling. So I was working in economics, then working in politics and ethics. And about 13, 14 years ago, I realised that what I'd been writing about in my life was about the whole of my life being offered to God. So I wrote three books on masculinity. I think my daughter's probably said to me, Dad, you don't really know a lot about being a man, you better find out, you know, write three books on it and you may be more of a man. I don't know quite what was going on there, but that I was writing about masculinity because I was a man. Then I was actually writing about disability because I'd actually had epilepsy all my life, and then diabetes and what have you. So it was not that the ideas that I'd been given were actually that constituted my calling. The training of my mind was the tool that God was using, but the whole of my life was the gift that I had to give to the world. So what I'm saying here is, don't restrict your search for a calling just to the ideas that you've worked with in academic life. That actually, as you go outside academia, you will find that work doesn't allow you to just stay with the bundle of ideas that you've been taught, as sometimes it can be the case in academic life. You get more and more of an expert into the world that you're studying. That the rest of the world is not actually organised like that. As you move out of academia into other parts of the working world, you'll find that some of what you've learned dissipates because people don't require just that set of ideas. But what also is the case is that you begin to look to other areas of your life to integrate in to the training that you've had, to the mind and the discipline of the mind that you've got. So don't neglect in your calling the other areas of your life. And I've said briefly this morning, don't neglect the tragedy of your life. Don't forget the failures of your life are part of your calling as well. The goodness of God is an act of faith. You can't just talk about the goodness of God when things are going well in your life. You're called to talk about the goodness of God when things are going badly in your life. You can't just shut God in a cupboard until the good times come back. So part of your calling, the things that God will use, the effectiveness of your witness, include the things that have gone wrong. Job is a very, very good example of that. That Job isn't a person who just talks about ideas. Job is someone who is actually questioning God because of the suffering he's going through. And yet, that person is used by God and is still being used by God throughout human history for what he can teach us. So when we go out then outside into the working world, God uses us as whole people. He uses us in our weakness and fragility as well as in our strengths. And we are enabled by being Christians to see life as vocation. When I lecture on work to people and say that much of what we're doing for God will be represented in the new world, that it just doesn't disappear, quite a lot of people find that very difficult to take. They have got a view of their life in this world as going up to death or going up to the second coming and then cutting off and then being rewarded for the spiritual bits and not rewarded for the rest. And so if you're not a missionary or a preacher or somebody who witnesses every day at work, which I would find enormously irritating if someone did that, then basically you're on a hiding to nothing. Difficult for the butcher to see life as a vocation. Difficult for the chicken feather plucker in the factory to see life as a vocation. And yet you and I are called to follow Christ, and that is our vocation. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we do it for Christ, and that means it is a vocation. That's the Pauline teaching on work. Even slaves work for their owners as if they are working for Christ. So there is no problem with your work being slightly specialised or being couched in technical terms. What it means is that what you do for Christ. And it's for Christ to work out what is done for him and how he uses it. Living as Christians and working in the wider world has unintentional consequences. As you get older, you realise the number of people in your life you have rubbed up against, the conversations you've had with people, which have been inconsequential as far as you've been concerned, but it's because you've been committed to Christ, something of what you've said or something of who you are has actually been important for other people. And so on a daily basis, I would urge you to see your life as something which is a gift to the world, whatever you're doing, but to do it with integrity. And to have integrity, you need to have boundaries. And I think this is where it's so difficult for us today. We need to be able to ask, what is the line over which I will not step? I'm working in agencies which sometimes have no moral vision. I'm working for organisations for whom the bottom line is the only thing that matters, and which are ruthless. I've got relations, young men who are working in management consultancy and law, and they work the most extraordinary hours. They sleep in their offices sometimes. And why is that? The reason is if they don't keep working, somebody else will get their job. And they are being threatened all the time. They're being rewarded with high salaries and perks, but also there is this underlying threat that, look, if you don't work like this, there are a number of people who'd love your job. And this kind of pincer movement of higher reward and threat is something that can dehumanise people at a very young age. And it means we have to ask ourselves, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be able to reflect and express our humanity? And therefore we need to be able to create a boundary. And we need to be able to ask, is what I'm doing worth it? Is the reward that I'm getting worth it? It may well be that we're being paid very well for what we're doing, but when we get home every evening, we feel crestfallen, we feel diminished, we feel that our vocation has been undermined. And we need to be courageous in those kind of situations. Maybe we'll go through a series of protests maybe we'll raise our voice in a meeting and say, I don't think this is the right thing to do. But we know that if we do that, that we've jeopardised our future. We need people around us then, as we go out into the world of work, who are wise around us. When we're young and we're coming out of university, however bright we are not wise in the ways of the world. And we need mentors. We need spiritual directors. We need friends with whom we can discuss the things in our lives. We shouldn't be alone. Our shoulders are too narrow to bear the kind of burdens that can be placed on us. And so we need to make time for other people, to give ourselves to them, and we need to accept the wisdom of other people. Because there may be times in your life where you need to walk away from something because you're a Christian. Not because it's evil, not because it's furthering oppression, but because it's not the right thing to continue doing. And that kind of decision is taken with agony. Partly because you might think it wasn't the right thing to do all along. How was it that I could have made the mistake in going into this position when it led me astray? But we do need people around us. I don't think in my life it's been enough to just pray privately about these big issues. Prayer has been essential, but it has always been really important to, with other people, discuss the way forward. And there are some times that when you're so knocked in life that your belief in God actually starts to wane. And it is then that other people need to pray for you and believe for you and to carry you. I meet so many people who are very, very bright people who are stressed and depressed. They are stressed because they're working so hard, are using their talents to bring about some vision that they believe is the right thing to do. And they're depressed sometimes because the culture within their working is actually not a culture which is helping them to do that. Other people are cutting corners, other people are behaving unethically. And I think one of the things about the church that's important is that it is the body of Christ. That we do uphold one another as the body and actually do support one another lovingly as workers and not only as brothers and sisters in Christ. So being in the world then as workers is no less a vocation than being an ordained minister. And it's for us, I think, as we go into the world of work and we work maybe for high reward, that we take what we're doing every day to Christ, commit it to Christ, realizing that that commitment, that questioning, that dissatisfaction, that longing for something more may sometimes lead us to be unpopular in the working world. Even at the same time as we're working harder and being more effective than other people around us. One of the issues then that has faced me, or been interesting I think, for me, is that the very thing that threatened to take me away from the world of work, which was that I had epilepsy, is the thing that has given me street credibility in the calling over the last 13 years of working in the area of disability. And the idea that this week I was appointed as the Church of England's advisor on disability issues is another milestone in a pathway which is not about ideas, although those are important, but it's about the whole life experience. So always keep an eye open as you're working in a lab in commercial life, or your teaching, whatever it is you're doing, always keep an eye open for the whole of life being used. For those things which have not been so glorious, for those things that have been the struggle, for God to use those, what one writer calls the ashes experiences, the wounds, and to bring those in. It may be just talking to a colleague who's lost a relative and you lost a similar relative at a similar age. Nothing may be to the world of work, about the world of work. Or it may be something that God is using to form your working world that you could not have envisaged earlier in your life.